Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello. Well, I don't know about you, but I am ready to travel. Are you tired of being in lockdown? Well, what I want you to do is put on your traveling cap of imagination and join me and my guest, Michael Higgins, because we are going to France this evening. Yes, we are. In fact, we're going to be exploring wine regions, the Bordeaux area of France. Michael Higgins, I am so delighted to have you on the air with me again. The last time we talked, we went to Argentina. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Donna. I am delighted to be here. It's great to talk to you again.
You are one traveling photographer, researcher, food taster, wine sampler, and interviewer of people that just have a passion for that liquid substance that comes in so many different, what do I want to say, textures of flavor that goes with so many different foods. Michael, how in the world did you get involved with the wine, the love of wine, the industry, the people, the families that are engaged in it? What spurred that for you?
The more I drink, the more I love it.
Okay. All right. That's one way of getting to the point.
Well, wine is an acquired taste. And the more you drink it and then drink really good wines, you gain a palate. And your palate becomes more and more sophisticated. And you really understand not only what you like, but you understand, you know, the nuances that make great wines great.
When I interviewed you a few years ago, and you had this spectacular publication on these phenomenal areas that were growing wine in Argentina, it was just such an eye-opener for me, because the people of Argentina really enjoy delicious food. They are very, very social, and wine has become a part of their culture that I think was always there, but they would import their wines previously. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they would do that, and then they realized that they had the right environments to create their own wines, and they're in world competition with their wines, aren't they?
Well, they are, and Malbec, which it's interesting we're talking about Bordeaux today, because Bordeaux has five different grapes, and one of them is Malbec, and what's happened in Argentina with Malbec has just changed the world for them. They have risen to the fifth largest wine region in the world because of that. Malbec thrives in Argentina.
Now, this is all about the land. I can recall a number of years ago, someone talking to me about the wines and how important soil was, and how before there were the wonderful orchards for grapes like we have today in California, here in Washington, Oregon, British Columbia. There's so many places that have evolved through the recent generations to having a distinction of excellence. But there was really a challenge, because you just can't stick a grapevine in the soil and just say, okay, grow, and it does it. It doesn't work that way, does it?
It doesn't. You're speaking of what's called terroir, and the soil makes a huge difference. And Bordeaux, which I think is the center of the universe for wine, because this is where Cabernet Sauvignon comes from, and Merlot, which are planted all over the world now. But when you look at Bordeaux, it's so complicated because of terroir. And when it comes to the real, real simplicity of this, is known as left bank, right bank. That's left of the Garonne River and right of the Garonne River. And the wines that are on the left of the Garonne River are primarily Cabernet Sauvignon with Merlot blended in. On the right-hand side, it's Merlot-driven with Cabernet Franc. So it's two different types of soil, creating very different terroir for these grapes to grow.
It was a number of years ago. In fact, I have to say it was shortly after I started my show. It was in the early 2000s. And I interviewed a gentleman that was in charge of one of the biggest wineries in the United States. And at that time, they were doing an experiment of what they called the organic wines. It hadn't become the buzzword. Of course, in my mind view, all wine is organic, but that's my bias. But this was how you grew them. And I remember him talking about how there was one area where they use no pesticides whatsoever, because let's face it, they have to deal with fungus, they have to deal with bugs. This is the reality. Nature is not pristine. Nature has all kinds of critters and fungi, bacteria, etc., that can destroy everything within a very short period of time.
It's really true. And vineyards are very sensitive to that.
Oh, very much so. Temperature, moisture, all of these things. And they found, at the time I did the interview, they found that the wines actually had a different flavor and were richer in body with the way they were growing organically. But that meant they had to do certain things. Now, when I was going through your book, now this is a book on Bordeaux, France, and their wineries. I noticed with so many of the vines and the photographs that you have of the area, some of them really were very, very rocky environments. And
rocky.
Yeah, yes. Just very rocky. It surprised me.
The rocky environment is the left bank. And the Cabernet Sauvignon loves the rocks. Cabernet Sauvignon needs a lot of sun. It's a long growing time. And what happens is that when the sun hits those rocks, it reflects the light back up into the vines. Think of it like being in a swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting a double suntan. You're getting the sun on you, and then you're getting the reflection off the water back on you a second time. And that's what the vines get from this double sun. That helps that Cabernet tremendously. And then at night, when it cools off, then those stones, the heat is released back into the vines, extending the warmth of the day. And this is so critical to Cabernet Sauvignon. So those
amazing
stony areas you see are all on the left bank. That is the Medoc. It is Graves, which Graves, by the way, means stones.
Hmm.
Like gravel, Graves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Also, what fascinated me was the technology that has evolved. And, I mean, I've been on tour with different facilities that produce beers and this type of thing. And it's I was accustomed to see very, very large pieces of equipment, you know, processing the hops, etc. But I was astonished at the equipment that is used for the wines, but we're talking about acres and acres of grapes that have to be processed in the temperature control, everything. This has become such an exacting science, and I'm sure the computer technology is a blessing in many respects because of its sensitivity to detect certain things, but you have a picture of an environment in your book of the Chateau Beauregard, and it has blue soil. You mentioned blue soil, and I'm looking at how the people that have taken this facility and they are upgrading it, these massive storage tanks that they have in place. It is absolutely amazing. And for you to be able to even take a picture of it, to me, was just incredible. But all of the technology that goes into this is very sophisticated.
I'm on that page now.
Yes.
you know, this book, I mean, that page with that photo happens to be page 450. That's how big the book is.
I know.
But look how sophisticated. Those are concrete vats. That is actually their own design that they have patented.
Oh, my.
It has very specific qualities to the shape and how that perfects their wine.
Amazing. Well, now, because it's concrete, It has to be a particular composition because concrete absorbs so much. And they're processing wine. They must have a particular lining inside of those huge, huge storage tanks. I'll call them a tank for the lack of a better description right now, because they're more like, I would say, upside-down cones. But they are just amazing.
Like that.
They're just amazing. They must have a lining in there to keep the concrete from affecting the grape juice.
There's two ways to do concrete. And one way is to put epoxy on the inside, which does seal it, like which is what you're talking about. And so there is no absorption. And that's not what you see in this picture. These are raw concrete on the inside. And it's deliberate because it does breathe. You know, the oxygen can go through that concrete. And the best way to think of this is like the oak barrels. Wood breathes also.
Mm-hmm.
So by having raw concrete, you get the same breathing or a similar concept of breathing to the wood, where if you put epoxy in it, completely sealing it, that might be best compared to the stainless steel tanks because that doesn't breathe either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
very
true. Really, this is what they're after. They want that breathing. They want that oxygen to have its effect in the process.
The making of a wine barrel. I loved this section because when you think of the old stories about how wine is stored and how important it is, the different woods that might be used for making a barrel and how barrels can be reused, but they have to be cleaned a very, very special way. You have a wonderful section in your book on a cooper, and that's C-O-O-P-E-R.
Yes.
I just love this because it shows how this age-old art is still very, very much in demand, and you have to really know what you're doing for these beautiful barrels, which often hold wine for years, and how important they are.
Well, you know, it was truly amazing. Going to that cooper, each winery, when they order barrels, the barrels are made to order. The specific trees, how long they're aged. Do you realize when they cut up those barrel pieces, they put them outside in the sun for like a couple of years, aging them, mm-hmm. before they come in and start getting cut down and shaped into barrels, and then the way that they put the fire on the inside to toast them. It's called a toast. It's all done to the exact specifications of that winery. And that winery may want some modifications so they have some different kinds of barrels.
Amazing.
It's very sophisticated. It isn't just taking a tree and putting it into a barrel.
Incredible. Well, and you have an image of these pieces of wood. The oak, in this situation, and oaks are slow growing. I mean, they take a long time. We have oak trees in my neighborhood, and they are hardy trees, but they take a long time to grow. So that oak is very, very precious. You're not going to find an oak tree on every corner. So this is really something that they don't want to waste any more than they have to.
You know what's crazy, Donna? These trees are 300 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
There are forests of trees, of oak trees, that were planted that long ago with the initial intent on having the wood to build ships. That wood is now used for wine barrels. And believe it or not, it's completely self-sustaining. They are not depleting those forests. They keep replanting them, so that 300 years from now, the next tree will be ready. And it's really very well managed.
Now, that is a story about conservation that
is
just incredible. I don't think most people would even know that. I didn't know that. A lot of people don't know that.
Until I went there and started doing this research, I didn't know most of this stuff. I mean, I spent 21 weeks in Bordeaux. I mean, the last time I went there, I was there for a solid 2 months. making sure I got everything I needed in order to complete the book. So this was an amazing learning process.
When you were there, one of the things that I noticed in your book on Bordeaux, France and the wineries is that there were many women involved in the winery business. And
so true.
That is a huge shift from what it used to be. I'm not saying that women weren't interested, but these are women that are really running these wineries. And what is it? A woman by the name of Brigitte Ruller-Losser, she took over an estate? Was that the Chateau d'Alem?
Oh, that's right. Chateau d'Alem. Exactly right. Yes, she runs it. She took over from her father, and she has done with that winery way beyond what her father ever imagined. It's a huge success.
And she has, you know, we were talking about the concrete storage. Now, in the facility that she has developed, they use stainless steel.
She has, it's interesting, she has both the old winery and the new winery, and she has wood vats and stainless steel vats. And she's using them as she wants to, based on how she wants the wine to turn out for the blending to create the wine that they want.
And she
has... You know what's really interesting? Because in France, the way they, in Bordeaux, they make wine like a chef makes food. It's a blend.
Mm-hmm.
Each winery is going to have just one wine. You know, we're here, you're in Washington, I'm in California, and these wineries will make a dozen different wines. That's not how they do it there. They have a piece of property, and they're making their wine off the grapes they grow from that property, and they are blending the different grapes and the different micro terroirs to make the absolute perfect wine. And they may have a secondary wine because there's juice left over.
Mm-hmm.
So they take the juice that's left over and make a secondary wine, which is much less expensive. But for them, they're making one wine, and that's what they do. And so when you think of this woman here at Chateau d'Alem, she's using all of the wood barrels, the stainless steel barrels, to perfect the absolute best wine she can.
Incredible. And I am just amazed at how meticulously clean everything is. I don't know if that is because of regulations, but every one of your photos, when I was looking at them, no matter where you were, meticulous maintenance. And boy, when COVID hit, they didn't have to worry about anything because they were already keeping everything meticulously clean.
You have to do it.
Oh, boy.
Because you can't have contamination. It would kill your wine, you know, and you have to wait another year.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be really meticulous about that.
Chateau Gabby, I delighted in your conversation with the gentleman there because he does something rather unique. He plays music to his vines. You've got to share his story. I thought
Isn't
this
crazy?
Was so
it's
good.
Amazing.
I loved it. I loved it.
Well, you know, he's... When I was there, I thought there was a church nearby playing music. I didn't know what it was. And ultimately, when I talked to the winemaker, they're playing music to create a vibration in the vineyard for the health of the vines. And they play different music at different times of the year based on the life cycle of the vine. You know, if it's in that fall time when they're producing grapes, that's very different than the winter time or the spring when it's a very different growing process of the vine. And everything is geared towards the health.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, I just...
And you know, I can relate to that when you think
yes.
of, you know, they play classical music to babies, you know,
mm-hmm.
so their minds develop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, they're doing that so that the grapes develop.
What I like,
this guy's brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And he called it bioscience, life sciences for his living vineyards. And, well, when you think of sound vibration, and he plays certain music during the dormant months, And I don't know, maybe it plays Brahms lullabies. I have no idea, but it's just a very good concept. And that's not the first time I've heard about it. There was a gentleman, and I can't recall his name, who did scientific research about the effects of music on plants. And plants sort of like the rock and roll. They loved classical, and they hated hard rock. So I remember that research. I just thought that was great. And that was done a long time ago, long time ago. In fact, I came across something I was reading recently that brought that up, how that research had been done. And we just know that it makes a difference. Now, in your book, you also show information about the UNESCO World Heritage Village. And yes. I was so surprised to find out about St. Emilion. Tell us about this phenomenal location. You got an aerial photo of the entire area, and it is gorgeous.
Thank you. You know, I found a winery owner who is a pilot, like I am, that built a runway down the middle of his vineyard. And I went to see him, and we went flying. And that's how I got that photograph.
Amazing.
And the village is amazing. I mean, it's truly amazing. I mean, it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. There's probably only 100 people. I have it in the book. I can't remember. There's like 100 people that live there.
Mm-hmm.
But the most amazing restaurants, incredible restaurants. There's places to stay in the village, everything from, you know, 5-star, 3-star, and wine shops. And I mean, there's an underground church. It's the largest church underground in the world. And it was carved out of one rock, big, gigantic piece of limestone. It's huge. This is really an interesting place to go and explore.
Yes, and it's named after a particular monk who performed miracles. The stories that you...
I know, that's true, it is. He came there, he performed miracles, and that this place got named after him.
Mm-hmm. Just fascinating, fascinating information.
Yes, and you know, both St. Emilion as well as the city of Bordeaux, the downtown city center of Bordeaux, is also a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Oh, my.
So the history here is amazing. And those two, I mean, the village is really tiny. I mean, Bordeaux is 250,000 people in the city, and I think 750 or a million in the metro. But it's just a huge UNESCO, humongous buildings. I call it the mini Paris because it's got all these incredible monuments, and what a place to visit.
True. Now, you also bring out in your book, Exploring Wine Regions in Bordeaux, France. And again, there is so much detail here. We are just scratching the surface, but your photography is just phenomenal.
Thank you.
The wine co-ops. Now, this is in the Union des Protecteurs, and
yep,
they produce 4.5 million bottles annually. And this co-op is made of 150 owner growers. And wow, I mean, that is a
lot. Isn't that incredible?
Yes.
So these growers, they all bring their grapes to this one centralized facility. And some of them are making their own bottles with their own labels, and some of them are contributing them to the big picture of some of the larger volume wines that this co-op is producing.
Amazing. But you know
it's
what?
Truly amazing.
Anybody that ever has had a desire to visit France, I'd say go to Bordeaux before you go to Paris. Because you have so much there. The castles. I mean, these places have been renovated and they've been kept to their historic architectural beauty, and they are just wonderful. The Grand Barral, or Barreau, that's a 5-star hotel, but
it is
just looking at the grounds and
the castle.
It just takes your breath away. It is gorgeous.
Yes. You know, Bordeaux is the land of castles. The castles are everywhere. And one of the things that I particularly did in this book was to seek out the castles where you can spend the night. Because there are castles in the vineyards. These are castles that are part of the vineyards where you can actually spend the night.
Exciting. Really
exciting.
It's
so exciting. It's amazing to spend the night in a castle.
Now, there's a chateau, and I do not know how to pronounce the last part. It's a chateau du Roquetaillade. Roquetaillade? I mean,
And you want me to pronounce that?
Oh, well. But this is
a
fortress.
That's a castle. You can't spend the night, and there's no grapes.
No grapes?
No, but some of these castles were built as fortresses, and some of them were built to show off people's wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two kinds of castles. Well, this particular castle is strictly a fortress. I think it's been in the family for, I don't know what it is, 1,700 years or some real long period of time. But one fascinating thing I learned is that, you know, there's two ways to take over a castle. One is to attack it. But you don't do very good because they're in the castle and they got little holes and they can hit you and you can't hit them. Not a very good idea. So the second way you take over a castle is to wait, because eventually everybody gets hungry and thirsty.
Mm-hmm.
And this castle is not that story. They are on top of a well where they have unlimited water, and they can, and here again, I got to look it up in the book, but I believe that they can last for 2 years.
Yes.
Inside that castle.
They even stored enough food to last for 2 years.
Right.
Gee.
So if you're waiting, pretty soon you're going to get hungry.
Yes, no kidding. But it's,
yeah, so this was a very successful castle. Very successful.
The history behind each one of these, and then, of course, the forest of the five senses that you have. I mean, this reminds me of Oregon and Washington. It just feels right at home. But they just have this beautiful environment, including a very, very friendly visitor. What do I want to say? The person that is happy to greet you is a goat. I mean, I really like this.
I know, that's true.
It's got an ambiance that if you really love nature, you are going to love this place. It's just, and it's a chateau.
Chateau Smith au Lafitte.
Mm-mm.
And the wine is off the charts. It is incredibly good. Like, wow.
Amazing.
It's expensive, but it's this is amazing wine, but it's a big place. They have so much to do there. You really go for the day. You can spend hours and hours in that forest of the senses.
Wow. You know, I look at this and I think there are so many beautiful places in the world. And I know that we Americans and other people around the world, we love to go and we love to see things. And I think it's so good to be able to be aware of places like this and to know, and that's going to come about. We're going to, I think, towards fall of this year, I think we're pretty much going to be able to open things up and travel more. But to be able to go to places like this, see the beauty, learn the legends, also be aware that many of these wineries have been in families for generations. And
so true.
What it takes to bring all of this together so that it is something that is not only sustainable, but they're very, very much into conservation. They want to be able, they know, they have to take care of the land, they have to take care of the vines, they just have to take care of everything. It's a huge, huge challenge and occupation. You know, Michael, we've just barely scratched the surface on your book, and there's
so much to talk about, isn't there?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But if you want to find out about wine and food and castles, and if you want to just figure out a place that you could go to that none of your neighbors have ever been to, you really need to get this book, Exploring Wine Regions, France, Bordeaux. Oh, this is just, it is wonderful. I loved your book on Argentina. It taught me so much about the country, about the people, about their food and their wines and the amazing things that they're doing. And here you've done this with just this little area of France. But wow, there, like you said, there's so much to, I mean, you've been there for so many trips and you still haven't gotten all of the information, but my goodness, what you have gotten is just incredible.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you.
Well, it is a feast for the eyes, and you won't gain 1 inch of anything from looking at the pictures, because your pictures of their food, it's just great.
You know, there's almost 1,000 of my photographs in that book.
Oh,
and I hope that's the inspiration that just people love and love and love. And want to go there, because it will be
true soon
that we're traveling again.
Yes, and it is going to be an absolute joy. So, if you are a person that loves to travel, or if you say, I want to put this on my vision board, Donna, I really do, then get the book, because you've got enough in this book to fill that vision board, and you'll just have the time of your life. Not only that, but you'll make new friends, and it's just wonderful. These people enjoy having people coming out to their facilities, to their sites. But more than anything else, it is not commercialized. It is something that each and every one of the places here has its own personality. It's just got an ambiance, each and every one of them, that is fabulous, plus having delicious wines and delicious foods. Now, Michael, you have a website. It's M. Higgins, H-I-G-G-E-N. Or INS, excuse me.
No, you're doing my email. The website is exploringwineregions.com.
Thank you very much for correcting me. Couldn't read my writing. Exploringwineregions.com. Michael Higgins, this has just been great. And again, your last name is H-I-G-G-I-N-S.
That's correct.
They will find it. But gee, thanks so much for letting me know about your latest adventures.
You're so welcome.
Great. You have a magnificent, magnificent life, and wow, it may be another 3 years before you finish your next book, but let me know.
I'm going to enjoy the whole process, I promise you.
I bet you will, and we'll have many stories to share. Michael Higgins, thank you again for
being my
guest. Thank you, Donna. Bye-bye.
Always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's a joy. Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo, and we are going to be taking a break. Check out his website, ExploringWineRegions.com. ExploringWineRegions.com. Yes, and the telephone line is open this evening if you wanted to give me a call and chat. 253-582-5597. Well, we're back from France, so just know that we're going to take a little bit of a break, and if there's a caller on the line, stay on the line. I will be with you shortly. And oh my goodness. After talking with Michael, I'd love to be on a plane going to Bordeaux. Just think of the adventures you could have. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back, and I've got good things to share with you. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio, able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to Mrs. Sebo's Classics.com. This is Donna Sebo, If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. Tomorrow evening, we're going to be talking with Sophia Goebel. And again, if there's somebody on the phone line, stay with me. I'll be with you shortly. The book Restoration Unveiled. If you have ever been wondering how old books are restored, well, Sophia's going to be able to give us that information. But more than that, you know what? We're going to let you know how you could actually take care of repairing your own books. So that's coming up for tomorrow evening. In the interim, let's see if we have somebody on the phone line. Hi, this is Donna. Are you calling into the show?
Yes, hi.
Hi, your first name or initial, please, and where are you calling in from?
This is Joni. And I'm calling in from Tucson, Arizona.
From Tucson. All right, Joni. Well, the first thing I'm looking at with you is you've got your hands full. And I feel as if, in the image I'm getting, it's as if my wrists are tied together. And my fists are closed. And my wrists, and I want to do something, but my hands are tied. So I'm not able to do what I want to do. Now, I want to say about June or July, you're going to find that those ties will disappear. So whatever this is in relationship to, you need to know that it is not going to be a permanent situation, and it's something that you've got to wait. And the timing on this, you really need to know how important the timing on this is, because it is going to make all the difference in the world. The fact that your wrists are tied together tells me that there are circumstances beyond your control. And if you can, don't stress out over that. Just say, all right, I'll go with the flow, and when the time's right, those bindings of circumstances that I'm going through will be gone. And that is very, very important for you to understand. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't take care of everyday business and the things that need to be taken care of. But what I'm watching here is a feeling of stagnation, and you're not stagnating. What do I want to say? You're sort of fermenting. Maybe that's not the right word either. You're going through a process that has to be able to percolate in its rightful time. And it is just very intriguing to me how this occurs with you. So I want you to know patience is going to be important, but also being engaged in what you can take care of. Don't try to fight against what you're not able to control. Sort of like the COVID. Nobody asked for this. Nobody stood out on a street corner saying, Yahoo, let's have this kind of situation. No, no. But it did hit. It has affected people all over the world. But does that mean life stops? No. It means there's an adaptation process. Maybe that's a better word than fermentation. Adaptation and flexibility. So that is what I'm looking at here. And I think June, July is going to enable you to move forward the way you really want to. And I think you're going to be very satisfied with this year overall as you enter into 2022. I think you're going to look back on this particular year, 2021, as a year that has enabled you to get rid of loose ends and at the same time has enabled you to take care of what needs to be taken care of. But there's this adaptation. There's a different routing of action that you're having to use, which I think is good. I don't see that as something bad. Not at all. What's on your mind?
Oh, thank you. Well, I met a new friend, and I don't have many experiences within the last several years of having a friend like this. I left a long-term relationship, and I was spending time with this new friend, and he is not able to see me today or tomorrow, and we're going to spend time on Saturday. And I'm just wondering now, I'm starting to wonder if I made a mistake, because I thought that maybe I care more about it than he may care.
All right. When did you meet this new friend?
We started out in a work situation about a month and a half ago.
Oh, my goodness. My dear, I'm going to stop you right there. Good grief. You don't even have enough time to figure out very much of anything.
Well, I hired him to work for me, helping me clear a house out. And we spent day and night together working. And we focused on the work. And we spent like 4 to 6 hours every day together working, solidly working. And we were talking and laughing but getting the work done. I mean, he's a very hard worker, and I was working alongside of him. And then all of a sudden I noticed he was, his energy toward me had changed. And I suggested at the end of the work time, which is about a month and a half, almost 2 months, I said, you know, I'd kind of like to hang out. And he said, sure. So we started doing that. And, but like I said, today I'm having some doubts. I'm thinking, maybe I care more than what he does.
I think you're going about this the wrong way. I think you're trying to make something happen here instead of just let things flow, for heaven's sakes.
Okay.
This is something that in our world today, I do not know why people are so adverse to taking the time to get to know somebody. And you don't have enough time. I don't care that you work together 24 hours for, you know, 6 months, a year, 20 years. It doesn't make any difference. That is not what building an understanding about a person's character and relationship to you is about. And I think you're trying to make a judgment here. Not that your perceptions are incorrect, but the truth is he might even be feeling like he's suffocating. He's got other things in his life. So this is important, and it's not a put down. Relax.
Okay.
Just allow it. Don't try to make it into something that it maybe isn't.
Okay.
And if you can make that okay, and if you have a chance to date someone else, date someone else, you know, it's all right. But allow each other to breathe, for heaven's sakes. And you know, relationships, I know there's a lot of romantic notions out there, but to really get to know a person's character, to really get to know what it is that they're about, it is going to take time. And having good conversation, that's wonderful that you were able to enjoy it, but you were in a working environment. And one of the things that is, it's very, very different, a working environment has a whole different set of boundaries. And then if you find, gee whiz, there's a compatibility thing here, that's great. That's wonderful. But let it breathe, for heaven's sakes. Don't try to make him the end-all of end-all. Don't do that. Because the friendship, see, a friendship is something that's very special. A friendship takes time and it takes nurturing. It takes time to build the trust, to build mutual respect.
Right.
And I think you're wanting this to be something more than what it really should be at this point, to be perfectly frank.
Okay.
But again, that is something that culturally, don't ask me why, but especially with we women, we have a tendency to just say, well, this should be happening right now. You know, I'm ready to get married in 2 days. Excuse me?
I don't think so.
I know that's not where you are. I know, but I'm just giving you an example. We are in an age patterning where everything is supposed to happen with a flip of a switch, instant gratification, whatever, instant communication. You need to breathe. You need to breathe and make this
well,
okay.
And I'm willing just to walk away from everything, you know, regarding this. And
but why are you going to throw away an opportunity to have a friendship?
And I'm not looking for marriage or to move in or anything like that. But I just thought, you know, he didn't call today. I would have called. Even if it were a girlfriend, I would have just said, you know, hey, how are you? Or texted her.
That's you. That's you as a female.
Yeah.
Males don't think that way.
Yeah.
All right? So what's really happening here is that you're saying, I'm willing to walk away, just like that. If you have enjoyed a good conversation with this person, if there has been that wonderful camaraderie, a friendship is worth cultivating. And whether or not this ever evolves into something, that's okay. It doesn't have to. But the fact that you have been able to enjoy a very healthy communication with a man, I think that's wonderful.
Well, we were intimate too, and we became intimate the last several days.
Well, that does change things. But remember, this is your perception.
Yeah.
All right. And it is what you feel, and it's a very, very common feeling about that women have, and that is, once there's that level of intimacy, then there should be that commitment on the part of the other person. But that's not necessarily the case.
You know, actually, I don't know what I want. I really don't. I mean, I was just enjoying the time. I have no idea what I want because I left a long-term bad relationship, and this fell into my lap, and I was enjoying every minute of it. And then, I don't know. That's why I was talking to you about, you said maybe I was smothering, or he felt smothered. Do you pick that up, that he felt smothered?
I think it's a very strong possibility. But again, can you just allow it to be?
Yeah, of course.
But don't, let's say, just cut off right now. No, you need to be able to understand this is a part of your own growth as a human being.
Yeah.
And there's no possessiveness here. There's no ownership here. And there have been some wonderful things that you've experienced, qualities that perhaps you would want to see in someone that you would like to have in your life as a partner. So all of that is important. But relax about this. Relax about this.
I just thought maybe I had made a mistake.
No. You're trying to control this too much.
Yeah.
You're trying to control it too much. You're wanting to own this in a special way. And again, I'm not saying this to criticize you. I am saying this to try to help you understand that it's time to shift out of a particular patterning. Take time to get to know the qualities of a person and what it is that you really do want.
Right.
And you've gotten a lot of good out of this. And if it's going to move forward, wonderful. If it's not going to move forward, wonderful. What it is that this is a time for you as a woman, as an individual, to really get down and ask yourself, what is it that I'm really, really seeking? And I know we don't have time to go into it on the air, but this is something that is very important for you to be able to honor and respect for yourself. And I think you've been given actually a wonderful gift. And this gift can enrich your life, or you can walk away from it feeling, just like you said, oh, I've made a mistake. I don't think there was a mistake made here. I think that there is a part of you that is breaking down some fear boundaries that I think you can eliminate, vaporize. But it's going to take some time, so just relax about this.
Okay.
And I want to thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Take care, my dear. And, you know, if you needed to call me for a private session, you can always do that.
Thank you.
You are welcome. Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597. Well, like I said, we've got a great guest tomorrow evening. And you know what? I find that there are so many amazing people doing amazing things. And we're going to be talking with Richard Grossinger about corona transmissions. Now, what this is about, he has gotten some people to participate in conversation regarding the COVID. And it is dealing with COVID. And you know, COVID has been around since the beginning of humanity. And then some, I'm sure. And it is always going to be around us, period. Do you know that viruses actually help to keep us healthy? Yes. So this particular scenario we have gone through, Richard was able to get together, I will call it a consortium of individuals, and their commentaries regarding this. And I just think it's an amazing conversation we're going to have. Then we're going to be talking with Melissa Richardson about the road to gratitude. And then a very dear friend of mine, Doug Johnston. I have known Doug for so many years. Doug is a very talented and gifted man, but we're going to be talking about one of his favorite subjects, cows, the magnificent Guernseys. And if you've ever been on a farm and been around the dairy environment, well, you probably know something about them. We all know about the Jersey cows, but are you aware of the Guernseys and their history with the Guernsey Island in England? Well, we're going to be sharing that and more. We've got so many wonderful people with different areas of expertise and interest, and we're going to be bringing it all to you. And remember, this second half of the show, when I am in studio, then you're going to be able to talk with me directly, just like the young lady did. And then we'll be able to have a little bit of a conversation. And the number at the studio is 253-582-5597. Now, I only answer the studio line for calls during the second half of the show. But I do have to tell you, I do have business trips that I take, and sometimes I'm not able to take calls. So all you have to do is listen to the bottom of the hour, and I will let you know whether or not I'm going to be there. And don't forget to like us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, because that enables my assistant, Deb, to get information to you about the guests that are coming up on the show and give you all of those details. By the way, I am going to be traveling to Idaho, and I am going to be there meeting with a number of people. So if you are in Post Falls, Idaho, Coeur d'Alene, anything like that, any area like that, you can always get in touch with me, because I will be sure to let you know where I'm going to be. You can find out what my schedule is, where I'm appearing, etc. And the office number, if you want to schedule a private appointment with me, is 253-582-5604. Now, I wanted to share a story with you this evening, and it really is about the spirit and essence that we all have, and how the mind-body connection is so very, very important. There was a wonderful story that Mark Victor Hansen shared that I thought I would share with you this evening, because I think that we as individuals, we often have a journey that takes us into twists and turns of life's experiences, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we fail to realize how much power we have as individuals. for ourselves as well as for others. And Mark was going to be speaking at the Mile High Church in Denver, Colorado. And when he got there, somebody greeted him and asked him, "Do you know about the Make-A-Wish Foundation?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Well, we have a little girl here. Her name is Amy Graham. She's been diagnosed as having terminal leukemia. They gave her 3 days. Her dying wish was to attend your services." Well, that was a surprise to Mark because he said, "I thought kids who were dying would want to go see Disneyland, meet Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, the big, big people at that time that were so famous. And why in the world would she want to listen to me? She only had a few days to live. Why?" So while he was thinking all these thoughts, there was a person that put the little girl's hand into Mark's. Now, she was little because she was sick. She actually was 17 years old. She was wearing a turban that covered her head because she was bald. She had lost all of her hair due to the chemotherapy treatment. She was so tiny and so small and so frail. And she said her two goals were to graduate from high school and to attend one of Mark's sermons at the church. And she said, "You know, Mark, my doctors didn't think I could do either. They didn't think I'd have enough energy. And I got discharged into my parents' care." And she introduced him to her mom and dad. And he said, "Well, you and your parents are our guests, and thanks for wanting to come." So Mark has traveled all over the world. And he's done and been involved in many different seminars that demonstrate healing. And he said he had watched so many people that had done profound healings right in front of one's eyes. And he said, "I wondered how it worked, why, all kinds of questions." So when it came time for Mark to speak, he asked the audience if they wanted to learn a healing process that might serve them for life. And everybody in the church raised their hands. They all wanted to learn. And he said, "I want you to vigorously rub your hands together, separate them by 2 inches, and feel the healing energy." And he said, "Then I want you to turn to the person next to you, because I want you to have a partner, and I want you to feel the healing energy emanating from yourself to someone else." And he said, "If you need a healing, accept one here and now." So the whole audience, the church was full. And he said the feeling that was in the church was just phenomenal. And he said there were a small percentage of the people, about 5%, found that there was a lot of energy coming out of their hands. So after this demonstration was done, he then said to the audience, "Before I came onto the stage, I was introduced to a 17-year-old girl, Amy Graham. She wanted to be at this seminar, and I wanted to bring her up here, and I want you to send her. Now that you've demonstrated what you can do for each other, I want you to do the same thing for Amy. I want you to send energy towards her. Perhaps we can help her. She didn't request it. I'm just doing this spontaneously because it feels right." Well, the whole audience was very excited and said, "Yes, we'll do it." Well, Amy's dad brought her up onto the stage, and she looked so tiny and so frail. And she was so weak because doctors refused to let her walk for 2 weeks prior to her coming to the seminar. And Mark led the audience. They warmed up their hands. They all directed healing energy towards her. When it was over, there were people in the audience that were crying. 2 weeks later, she called the church to say that her doctor had discharged her after a total remission of her leukemia. 2 years later, Mark was notified that she had gotten married, and he said, "I've learned never to underestimate the healing power we all have. It is always there to be used for the highest good. We just have to remember to use it." Donna Sebo here. God bless, be well. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And won't you join me tomorrow evening? We've got a fascinating subject. Hey, it's all about books, and you know how I love those wonderful items. Books. Won't you turn that light on inside yourself and let it shine? You just don't know whose life you are going to touch.
Listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.